All right, welcome everybody to Moedon Ivri, Club Hebrew. We are getting to start a new section now. We're going to start the book of Habakkuk. So if you've never had a chance to look through the book, it's a fascinating book. It has a lot of interesting things theologically in it, but also syntactically, linguistically, and the structure of the thing is unusual as well. It's because of the way Habakkuk speaks in the first part especially that the early church said that Habakkuk came closest to blasphemy of any of the other prophets because of his boldness. So that's saying something, you know, given how a lot of people speak to Yahweh throughout the Bible. So you'll see that kind of right off the bat, why they make that contention for Habakkuk. You'll also see kind of a couple of interesting things that happen. You'll see what he does, not what he does, what happens with the Hebrew verb, let's say, and some decisions that you have to make, and we'll find that, see that right off the bat as well. All right. One of the issues, too, is who's speaking in any part of the book. Because, as you know, most of the prophetic books don't announce when they're changing speakers. And Origen said that that's one of the toughest things about the prophets and about reading the Bible. You've got to determine who is speaking. And it's not always easy to do. Here it's a little easier, but you'll notice that the switches come without warning. And, of course, that is an issue in the Psalms as well. I think we saw that even in the few psalms that we did, you know, who's exactly speaking at any time is not always easy to determine, all right? So let's look at the first verse. Remember, Habakkuk is a 7th century prophet. So Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah kind of form a group. Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, remember, Babylon and their threat is what is most in the background of what they're talking about. All right. So this is before the exile, and Habakkuk, you know, probably not long before the exile started. Babylon kind of took control of that area with an iron grip, and the die was cast, so to speak. So we go to verse 1. Hamasa Asher Chaza Habakkuk Hanavi. The Masa, sometimes translated as burden, but here probably better the oracle or the revelation, which Habakkuk saw, Chazah, which he saw. So Habakkuk Hanavi, the prophet, saw. This is all the kind of biographical information you get. Some prophets, notice, have a lot more background as to who they are or when they prophesy. Here you don't. You just get this very simple introduction. Notice the prophetic experience is captured with that one word or characterized chazah. Does that mean he saw something visually? Was it both hearing and seeing? What was the nature of it? We don't know. Remember, a lot of the visions are called chazon as well, the vision which the prophet chazah saw. All right, but here it's called a masa. All right, verse 2. Adana Yahweh Shivati Velo Tishma. Ezak Elecha Hamas Velo Toshia. Alright. Adana. How long, O Lord? Shivati. Here's a PL, perfect, first common singular from Shava. To cry out. Alright. Now, you can notice the Adana, you can take it two ways. A lot of, very similar to what we do in English. It can be a question. Right. Oh Lord, and translations do this. NIV, for example, translates that Shivati as shall I cry. So if it's a question, how long, O Lord, shall I cry out? All right. It can also be interpreted not so much as a question, but this kind of expression of anxiety. O Lord, how long I have cried out. See the difference? And, you know, you can kind of take it either way as this question, how long will I cry? See, velo tishma, and you do not hear. Or how long I have cried, and you don't hear. Alright? You're going to have this issue is exactly what the force of the words are. in numerous parts throughout the prophet, which is one of the things that makes it interesting. All right, but notice kind of already the quotes accusatory language coming out, especially if you take it, how long I have cried, but you do not hear. All right, Ezek, notice he switches now from a perfect Shivati to an imperfect Ezek, just a call imperfect from Zaak. I cry to you, Chamas. I cry to you, violence, velo toshia, but you do not save. Hifil from Yasha. Alright. Lama. Now, sorry. Any questions on the first two verses? Yeah, Jim.
Chamas, is that like, I cry to you violently, or I call out to you, I cry to you clearly?
Most translated as, I cry out to you violence. So this is what he's actually crying out. And you know, behind that is, look at all the violence, or he's pointing it out to you, see? Alright. Now, so I don't think it's kind of an adverb how he's crying out. I cry out to you violently.
Is there any indication that that's what people yell when
they yell? No. I don't think so specifically. But again, notice the drama. I mean, as a reader, when you read that in English, you get a sense of Habakkuk's distress and also his boldness by that. And let's get to verse 3, and you can see how he kind of piles on this kind of expression. Okay. So notice, chamas is a particular kind of thing as well, violence. In other words, what it implies is what? That people are treating each other violently. Okay, but there's a kind of a lawlessness or brutality. So notice that word, we're not sure what's lying behind it. What exactly is he describing? What's the situation? Some scholars have suggested that, and I think probably commonly, that what he's talking about is the injustice that's going on in Israelite society. Others have suggested that, no, he's talking about oppression by other nations that's happening. I tend to think that it's the former, that he's describing what has happened to Israelite society. The lawlessness, the you know, you see this in other prophets, the accusation that Israelite is mistreating fellow Israelite, that he tries to capture with that word chamas. Alright? So save here would be, you know, you don't intervene, you don't do anything, basically you're not doing anything to help his situation. Alright? Verse 3, Lama tar'eni aven vet amal tabit. Alright, now, notice how the tone strengthens a little. Why do you make me see? This is a hifil from Ra'ah. Why do you make me see aven? Iniquity or guilt. Why do you see? So notice he's moving from chamas to aven. Why do you make me look at aven? Guilt or iniquity. And amal, again, something like trouble. Tabit, this is from the root navat, a hifil imperfect, navat, it only occurs in the hifil. See, so why do you make me look at aven? And again, you have to understand why. And why do you look at or have regard for amal, trouble? See, now notice how the early church fathers are interpreting that line. Alright? Why are you making me look at Avon? And Amal, why are you looking at it? See? So it's as if, you know, the look in the second instance, look in the sense of putting up with. You know, you're kind of looking at it and not doing anything, is how these verses are interpreted. So see, if interpreted that way, Habakkuk is speaking with great boldness and rashness. That's what they suggest that Habakkuk is doing. So it's a very kind of electric speech here, right at the beginning of the book. Alright, and sets up a certain personality of Habakkuk without saying anything. You know, as readers we begin to infer, well, what kind of guy is this? What's his mood? See, we see anger, we see disappointment, we see confusion. See at this situation. So great injustice in society, iniquity, and Yahweh's not doing anything. So notice how he piles it on the second line of verse 3. V'shod v'chamas l'negdi. See, so reading it again, why do you show me aven and amal you regard and showed, okay, again, havoc and chamas again, violence or destruction before me. So notice how he piles these words up. And so within three verses, you get Chamas, Aven, Amel, Shod, Chamas again. And now notice how he finishes it. Vayahi Reev, and there is Reev, contention or strife. And Madon, again, same kind of thing, strife or contention. Yissa rises. Alright. Just kind of as you're backing off, look at all the verb forms that he's using here. Kind of very typical of prophetic speech. You have this switching back and forth. Especially, notice I've translated most of them with present tense because I am interpreting the situation as he is describing characteristics. So it's as if he's describing what is habitually, characteristically the case. So he's kind of like he's painting a picture. All right, and notice in English we normally use present tenses to do that, to describe a situation. And but in Hebrew you'll see them use perfects and imperfects like that. Okay, notice how it finishes up then. Well, you'll see later on this kind of thing continues. Okay, first of all, any questions through verse 3? All right, good. Verse 4. Al Kain, Tafu Torah. Velo yetzei lanetzach mishpat. Ki rishamak tir et hatzadik. Al kein yetzei mishpat me'u kol. Therefore, Torah tapu. That's from a rare root, pug, which means to grow numb or to grow cold. So, therefore, Torah grows cold or numb. And does not come out lanetzach ever. Okay, so notice, in Hebrew it's, and does not come out ever. In English we would say, and mishpat never comes out. Mishpat here in the sense would be, notice the English gloss, justice would really be in place here. And mishpat, justice, never comes out. See? So notice the result. The therefore, the result of what? Maybe God's inaction. See? Therefore, Torah, instruction, teaching. Torah, remember, is the light and the life. It's growing cold, tapug, growing numb. See, it's becoming ineffective. And mishpat, justice, what God wants for His kingdom, is not coming out ever. Alright? Now notice how He describes the situation more. Ki rishamak tiret hatzadik, for rasha, for the wicked one, maktir. This is a hifil participle from katar. Not a very common word, but it means to surround or go around. For the wicked surrounds the tzaddik, the just one or the righteous one. Therefore, mishpat me'ukal. The me'ukal is a pu'al participle from akal, which means to pervert or to twist. So notice it modifies mishpat. Therefore, twisted or perverted mishpat is coming out. So notice, mishpat never comes out. Instead, you get me'ukal mishpat, perverted mishpat coming out. Notice how verse 4 is a really nice kind of, as a reader, you get the sense, okay, this is the conclusion of the first part with the therefores, see? So he describes the situation through verse 3 and then verse 4. Therefore, Torah grows numb and mishpat never comes out. And ki could even give it this kind of assertive nuance. Certainly the wicked surrounds the righteous, see? Therefore, crooked judgment comes out. So the righteous, the tzaddik, never has a chance. All right. Good. Any questions through verse 4? All right. Notice that in your Hebrew Bibles, there's a space there, very nice, that the editors have done for you. And also, you'll see with the first word that the speaker is addressing plural. This is what's interesting. It causes commentaries a lot of trouble. All right, what's happening now is that the switch in speakers from Habakkuk to God. So God starts speaking, as you'll see here in just a few minutes. And so what you're going to get, especially in the first chapter, is this this conversation, it's not really a conversation, but a dialogue between Habakkuk and God. All right, but let's look at verse 3 and then I'll show you what the issue is. Re'u bagoyim ve'habitu ve'hitamhu temahu ki po'al po'el b'mekem lo ta'aminu ki yesupar. Okay, the imperative from Ra'ah, look among the nations ve'habitu. See, look among the nations and look carefully or something like that and have regard. Same word that was used up in verse 3. Right? So look among the nations and look carefully or something like that. Now, the hitam hu temahu, look at that, it's kind of an interesting construction. The root of both of those words is tama. Tav mem he. And it means to be astonished. The first one, can anyone guess what the conjugation the hitam hu is? It's a hit pa'el. A hit pa'el with the tav, the hit has been assimilated into the next T. So it's like hit tamhu. And so, you know, in Hebrew, hit tamhu, it assimilates. So you get that weird form, that's a hit pa'el from tama. The second one is a call imperative from the same root. So they're both imperatives, a hit pa'el imperative and a call imperative from to be astonished. So it's something like, you know, be astonished, be astonished. All right, now I don't know what the nuance of the different conjugations is. You know, if you're an ancient Hebrew speaker, you might get it. But even in English, be astonished, be amazed, or something like that. So a lot of translations will translate it like this. Be totally astonished, or be thoroughly amazed. All right? So that they would translate, so that they would see it kind of as a hendiades, and as one idea, and the first imperative strengthening the second. But I kind of like the be astonished, be amazed, or something like that.
So, yeah, the way that people translate it in the Bible is more like a definitive absolute.
Right, right. And so you're right. So they're looking at it as one idea. I mean, notice what you get in Hebrew. See, hitam hu temahu. So you kind of get that sound play. All right, and there's a few other places where the prophets play. Remember, prophets do these powerful things with language. He does the same thing in the next line. Ki po'al po'el. A work is po'el. A work is working. Notice that that's a participle. A work is working in your days. Lo ta'aminu, not will you believe it. Now, notice that this last ki, yesu par, is normally translated as kind of either conditional or temporal. You will not believe it, or something like, you would not believe it if it were spoken, if it were reported, see? Or, you will not believe it when it is reported. So, but I think you could also do, you will not believe that it could be reported. I think that's another way to take that key clause as an object of you will not believe, because believe is begging for an object, right? So you either have to understand the object as previous, you will not believe it, and then the key clause as some kind of a subordinate clause, temporal or conditional, or take the key clause as an object. You will not believe that it could be said, or it will be said, something like that, all right? But notice that God has switched from talking direct, I mean, not switched, he's not using singulars here. So it's as if he's not talking to Habakkuk directly. And that's caused commentaries to suggest this is a composite text or to try to figure out what's happening. But I think you can handle it. This is my own solution. You get it, you hear it first here. Handle it pragmatically. All right? If, and do it, suppose it's like this. Let's say you're teaching a class, and say you're teaching like second grade, and this kid in the front's really irritating. He's acting in a strange way, or he's just acting in an annoying way. Are we going to have a test, teacher? Are we going to have a test? Are we going to have a test? And rather than the teacher, let's say the teacher, instead of looking at the kid directly and saying the answer, he says, okay, I want to make an announcement. There will be a test for everybody tomorrow, covering all the chapters. All right, notice that what is the teacher doing in that situation. Without saying anything to the kid, he's putting him down and exerting his kind of authority over him. See, so by ignoring him and speaking to other people, you have this kind of, it's time to shut up, kid, leave me alone, kind of move. And we have all kind of done that, see. So rather than confronting him directly, it's as if the teacher is going to make the power move to talk to the whole class and ignore that one person. So if you look at it pragmatically, see, it's almost like that here. You have Habakkuk talking very boldly. God, instead of speaking directly to him, kind of speaks to all the people. All right, it's as if to say, just be quiet, Habakkuk. Here's what's coming. And notice that what's coming is much more than what Habakkuk had in mind. And I guess we're going to have to take that up. I want to stop here because we'll take that up when we get to verse 6 after the break. Habakkuk didn't want that much. So it's as if he makes his power move and says, okay, Habakkuk, you want it, you're getting it. All right, good. Thanks for coming. We'll see you after break. Blessings on your travels. Have a great time.